This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
And the quiff, much admired by Angelina Jolie. The quiff, so much admired that she's going to recommend that Brad has it done.
She is.
How many times are you going to be mentioning that, do you think, over the next 10 years?
I'm going to say, Brad, baby, you may be the most handsomest man in the world, but you know what? Your hair's not up to snuff. But I met this guy.
Hi.
He just looked great.
Glyn in Snowy Shetland says, hi, Dempsey and Makepeace. Mark's latest impression of Mark Cousins was the spit of Louis Walsh. Happy days.
Actually, funnily enough, have you ever seen them together in the same room?
John in Oxford says the Dear Doctor's impression sounded more like Mrs. Doubtfire. In fact, a number of people.
Do you know who Mrs. Doubtfire... Fine, brilliant. Do you know who Mrs. Doubtfire is based on?
Thanks to for the many picture of... Mark Cousins with a...
Is that... It's not
no,
Mark
that's
Cousins.
Brad. That's Brad.
It's Brad with my hair. Excellent. Can we put that on the web?
It's going up on the web alongside the Angelina interview, 125,000 hits. If you just go to the front page 5 Live website, and that, and also hopefully, and I'll hold that up. This is a good radio moment. But if it's being live streamed, there you are. That's Brad Pitt with Mark Kermode hair.
Could I just say very quickly, do you know who Mrs. Doubtfire's accent is based on?
Thrill me.
Bill Forsyth. Because he'd made Being Human with Bill Forsyth, and that's why when he was doing Mrs. Doubtfire, he said he was doing an impression of Bill Forsyth.
And you've been hanging out with Bill Forsyth.
I have,
and
yeah.
And here's an email from Rachel George in Edinburgh. Dear Mac and Danny, like Mark, I am a huge and long-standing Local Hero fan. Mark was doing a piece about Local Hero for The Culture Show. And I would just like to say that although I'm usually in broad agreement with Mark's premise that, quote, very few films could not be improved by an exploding helicopter, I do think that this film, Local Hero, might spoil the ending of Local Hero and indeed Burt Lancaster. However, if there were a second helicopter flying some way behind, containing Jenny Seagrove, that could explode quietly in the background. That would be quite acceptable. And no less than she deserves such a dire attempt at a Scots accent, truly one of the worst ever attempted. It says a lot for Local Hero that her oral mangling doesn't stop it being one of the best films ever. And talking of oral mangling, I was in the audience for the Culture Show recording in Glasgow on Monday night and can report that we were forced to do a retake in which we clapped and cheered Mark's bagpipe wrangling
That's
moment
right, yes.
as the initial response. Was total
rubbish.
Crowd silence. Whether this indicated mute horror or complete indifference was unclear, but I sensed Mark's disappointment. Yeah. Was it with his own performance or our lack of enthusiasm? I could not be sure.
Look, I was very proud of the fact that I played that thing at all, and I was staggered that everyone didn't get up and do a Mexican wave. I want to say two things about that. One thing about the Jenny Seagrove moment in Local Hero. Did you know there's a howling error in Local Hero, which is when there's a scene when Jenny Seagrove is looking over with, you know, the guy who's trying to woo her. And she looks over and they see a bunch of seals. And she says, oh, you know, the Grey Seals. In that voice, I'm doing an impression of Jenny Seagrove doing a bad accent again. She says, oh, yes, the Grey Seals. And he says, oh, fishermen used to think they were mermaids. And she says, hey, they were wrong. They were. And in fact, the thing that they cut to is footage of sea lions. It was a terrible mistake that Mike Bradsell, the editor, who's a very good friend of mine, apparently went and sourced some footage and it said seals on it, but it turned out to be sea lions. And if anyone who knows anything, not only is Jenny Seagrove not doing a good Scottish accent, but she don't know the difference between a sea lion and a seal. And the other thing is, the ending of Local Hero, the studio offered a couple of million pounds or dollars for them to go back and reshoot an ending in which Mac gets onto the helicopter and then says, oh, I'm staying, and gets off the helicopter and stays in the village of Inverness. And Forsyth said, no, 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 no. And Putnam said, please, 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 please do something, do something, do something. And at the very 23rd hour, or 11th, what do you call it, 11th hour, 23rd hour?
Well, 11th, 23rd, we get the point.
You know, late
the
in
last,
the day.
The last minute, it's fine.
Bill Forsyth said, okay, I found a trim, which means an offcut, of the phone box. You can put that at the end and you can let the phone ring four times, but that's all you're having. And of course, that's now become one of the great closing moments of movies. It happened as a last minute compromise to stop the Americans from coming in and getting Mac to get on them and then get off. And
interesting example of a compromise that is creative and maybe better than the original.
Yeah, like you and me.
Thank you.
In fact,
Christina H. BA Honours Architecture and now currently working on a BSc Environmental Hazards and Disaster Management course. Mm-hmm. Dear Doctors, as a long-time listener, I've often tuned in to your programme on a Friday afternoon. We were talking about tuning in last week.
Anti-Meridian.
Or listened to the podcast in a leisurely manner. Today, instead of listening to my usual bass-thumping music, I downloaded last week's podcast onto my MP3 player to go for a run. Much to my surprise, the podcast made the run even more enjoyable, as listening to Wittertainment distracted me and kept me laughing and entertained throughout. I can only recommend this to other jogger-runner listeners and suggest that you have 2 hours of film reviews on Fridays, so the longer distance runners have more to listen to.
That'd be very good.
An interesting idea.
Do you know what AM actually stands for?
Amplitude modulation.
Very good, well done.
Thank you. Dear Simon and Simon, the subways were brilliant, says Simon, in Zurich on Saturday, and they dedicated a song to us all. It's because we said hello
to someone
that wrote in saying, we're going to see the Subways, one of your favourite bands, in Zurich on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, and they mentioned us.
Yes, they did. Because he wrote in and said, do you think you could get them to say hello? And apparently they did. They dedicated, which song was it? Thingy Blonde, Strawberry Blonde.
Anyway, they dedicated a song to us all. Having heard the show last week, the show was great, and at one point the lead singer crowd surfed to the bar, shook my hand, poured a beer over his head and jumped back into the crowd. Great. The support bands were good as well, especially the Blood Red Shoes. Worth a look at another possible female hello to Laura Mary Carter.
Hello to Laura Mary Carter. Hello to Charlotte, bassist of the Subways. Hello to Billy, the crowd surfing, pouring his beer over his head. And if there's anybody else would like us to get a famous rock band, say hello to them in a foreign country, please consider the service open now, as long as it's not you too. But then you're good friends with Bonio and the Hedge, so you could probably sort that out.
Yes, and I'm still going to convert you to that, because, as you know, you can be turned.
Yeah, but not in that way.
Yeah, you can. Well, you were turned by Neil Young.
You know what? If I was on a desert island with a hi-fi system and the complete works of U2 and nothing else, I would live the rest of my life in silence rather than listen to a note of their music.
Dear Doctors, I don't make the difference. You can work hard or you can work smart, says Nick on this. Last night I was at the Terry Gilliam Academy tribute event and I said hello to the real Doctor in passing, me dressed in black red tie. Very enjoyable evening with some surprising revelations from Terry. It's best if Mark explains all. There's lots and lots of stuff here. And then he says, I saw the Dodge Brothers.
He's a stalker.
You need to know that he probably is. The Mark's band is the Dodge Brothers, and it's spelt B-R-O-S, OK?
Dodge Bros.
At the borderline. Great entertainment. Says, Mark, you could be famous. Dye your hair blonde, become a duo, and drop the word Dodge from your name.
Very good.
Is the assessment there.
Which one are you? Luke, or Ken, as Viz used to call him. Can I just tell you quickly what the Terry Gilliam
the Terry
revelation
Gilliam
was?
Academy tribute event.
Yeah, it's the American, you know, the Oscars lot, AMPAS. The American, they did a tribute to Terry Gilliam last night, and Michael Palin hosted it. And then a lot of people came up and said how brilliant Terry Gilliam is, which I think you and I are in agreement. And then at the end of it, I did a half hour on stage interview with Gilliam, which
was half stage,
a half stage on
half,
hour
on a step.
That's right, yeah, exactly. And of course,
he had one foot on the floor,
one foot on the stage. So he was a half stage on hour interview. That's
that
right.
Sounds very casual.
I think that gag has now been completely killed.
And
he was great because, you know, as always, he's great, and it's very much you kind of wind him up and point him at the audience and press go, and he does the business. It wasn't anything to do with me that he was as good as he was. But the two things that he said was, firstly, they're very close to completing Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which you know was the film that Heath Ledger was working on when he died. And they've got in people like Johnny Depp and Jude Law to come in and reconfigure the character in magical ways, which we're looking forward to seeing. But he seemed very happy about that. But the other thing was that Jeremy Thomas was there, and apparently they have pretty much got the funding now to do The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which, as you remember, is the film that he started making, you know, 8-9 years ago, and then literally got swept away by an act of God and ended up giving birth to that documentary, Lost in La Mancha, in which Terry Gilliam faces the elements in a losing battle to get his film made. Well, it looks like the Terry Gilliam film is going to get made. So unlike the Orson Welles myth, he is going to make the Don Quixote movie, and wouldn't that be a great thing?
It would indeed. Dear Beaten Root, says Andy C. in Manchester, I don't like to precipitate on the good doctor's chips, but I think Angelina Jolie might have been humouring you about your hair. Yep. And Donald in St. Andrews, the perfect man, Mark from the scalp up, Brad from the scalp to the floor. Like that. Big debate also about this black and white Liverpool film that you love so much.
Oh, yeah. It's not all in black and white, but...
No, obviously, it gets exciting halfway
that's
through.
That's right, suddenly it's a glorious Technicolor.
Dear Ridley and Tony, says Andrew in Aberdeen.
I'm
that's
definitely
new.
Ridley.
That's new, though, and we haven't heard
no,
that.
No, we haven't. That's very good.
My good lady friend and I went to see Of Time in the City this week. Hated it. Didn't see the point. Only when we saw the amazing Kurt Cobain biography About a Son later in the week did we realise what Terence Davis was trying to achieve, but failed terribly. The worst thing is that my girlfriend Tracy, BSc honours pending, was so bored by the film that she made me, BSc honours MSc pending, watch Sex and the City to make it up to her. The theory being that if the good doctor was wrong about his choice for best film of the year, maybe he's wrong about the worst film too. I can't say either film grabbed my fancy, but I'd rather watch people having sex in New York City than people spending any amount of time in Liverpool City. There's a pun there to be had, but I can't be bothered to flesh it out properly, says Andrew. By the way, we are usually fans of alternative movies. The first film that we went to see at the cinema together was Inland Empire, which, if we're dragging up that old chestnut, has led to a stronger, better relationship than if we'd gone to see a generic rom-com.
Yes, that
Duncan in Kingston, dear Bernie in Slavica, I'll be brief. My friends and I are part of a film club which convenes in the West End every week. The last one we saw was Of Time and the City, and it was rubbish.
No!
Usually some in our group like a film and others don't. This time around, nobody liked it. In fact, we all sat down afterwards and were genuinely surprised at just how rubbish it was. Self-centred, boring, monotonous, self-serving, tedious rubbish. For example, his voice. Could it be more monotone and dribbly?
What? One could Terrence, that you're... Now, hang on.
Stop.
Whoa.
You can criticise, you know,
like, do not criticise Terrence Davis's speaking voice.
One could almost hear the spittle flicking the microphone. We all agreed that the musical interludes were sweet mercy from the dullness of his delivery.
The world is on a... it's not just the economy that's crashing, it's everything. You can do what you want. You can criticise an entire city and send Boris Johnson to go and apologise to it, but you cannot criticise that man's speaking voice.
Indeed.
He has a speaking voice that, you know, that makes Orson Welles... I tell you, if the Sherry Company were there, right, and Orson was going, probably the best, and Terence Davis came along, they would have said, Orson, step aside. Here is Terence Davis. That's the voice that I want to listen to. I'm sorry. I mean, I seriously think he has one of the greatest speaking voices of anyone alive. And I think you're mad to think otherwise.
Sarah Hill, English and drama undergraduate, Manchester University. Dear Harold and Maud, following the good doctor's advice, went to see Of Time in the City at the Corner House in Manchester.
No, at Corner House. There is no definite article for Corner House. And I remember when the decree was sent out. It's Corner House.
Yawn.
And it used to be a porn cinema before it was Corner House.
How really
it used to be the glamour porn cinema.
Fantastic. Any more exciting facts before I get to the body of what our listeners
When they opened it, they didn't have any rake in it because porn cinemas don't have a rake, and they showed a subtitle movie and nobody could read the subtitles because it hadn't occurred to them that it's a different requirement. But anyway, carrying on.
No idea what you're talking about. Anyway, says Sarah, I was moved to tears several times, left the cinema full to the brim with a revitalised faith in modern cinema.
Good. Thank you very much. You see, you get up, you know, to Manchester and intelligence, and where's the other two come from?
Frankly,
Dan South.
Frankly, Sarah Hill, who was right with you, then because you criticised her grammar by putting the Corner House and not just Corner House, she's not interested anymore.
No, she knows she's correct. She'll thank me for it, because if you go into Corner House Bar and say the, they'll slap you around the head with a packet of peanuts.
We have a Box Office Top 10, Body of Lies, the review coming up in just a moment.
We're getting to Body of Lies. There's so much stuff out this week, so shall we zip through the Box Office Top 10?
That's entirely down to you. All I do is read out the name of the movie then you witter.
Let's do it quickly.
Okay. At number 10, Saw 5.
Rubbish.
Igor at 9.
No Tim Burton.
Easy Virtue is this week's number 8.
Didn't see it.
Well, you see, now that, frankly, is no longer acceptable, is it?
Why?
How long have you had now to
But there's that? Like 8 movies out this week that we're going to try and get through. What do you want me to do? You want me to make more hours in the day?
Well, you've got nothing else to do with that with your whole week.
I've got nothing else to
do.
I've got to learn the bagpipes.
Just go and see the film. Burn After Reading at 7.
Yeah, it's on the way down. With Tilda Swinton. And Tilda Swinton is the best thing about it, but it's not that very good.
Dostana at 6.
Couldn't be bothered. I don't think that was press shown. But if you have seen Dostana,
money.
Send us in.
Queue up.
Saturday
night at the movies. Right. Ghost Town at 5.
Liked it.
Oh, you went to see that one, did you?
Yes, I did.
Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Didn't
at 4.
Like it.
High School Musical 3, Loved Senior Year it. At 3.
And I saw the other two.
And Max Payne is at number 2.
It's, you know, not very good.
Loads of Max Payne.
Tell me a Max Payne.
I think we'll get to them because we want to.
There's so much money that we're going
to. We'll try and get to some Max Payne. Quantum of Solace, Question of Sport is at number 1.
Dear
Bob, the Builder and Wendy. This is from Emma Hatfield. Very excited today. Going to be able to listen to the show live for the first time. I figured out that the live streaming thing is... I can see you both, although on reflection, not sure that was a wise idea. You don't have to wave to the camera just in case Emma's watching. I went to watch Question of Sport at the weekend, and I went to watch it out of habit, as you have to go and see the new Bond film. But I went with some trepidation after Mark's review and actually said to my husband in the ticket queue, Mark says High School Musical 3 is much better.
It is.
I understand the divorce papers are now in the post. Okay, it wasn't the best Bond film I've seen, and all that shaky out-of-focus camera stuff in the action sequences made me sick. We both came out of the cinema saying it's very much like the Bourne films, and that it was just okay and nothing special. However, unlike The Good Doctor, even with my lowly LLB and pending LLM, I did figure out the plot, and the theme song did work well when you watched it as part of the opening sequence rather than just listen to it on the radio.
Is it in the chart?
The top, the hit parade?
Yes, is it the tip, is it the Top of the Poppers?
We'll check that and get back to you.
Because I bet you it isn't.
Does that matter?
Well, it's. I mean, if it isn't, isn't it the first Bond theme in living memory to not be, you know, in the charts?
We're kind of out of your comfort zone now, aren't we?
Well, we are, because it probably turns out that it's number one and all up and down the country kids are raving to it.
Ben Lamb, a Hull University, third-year film studies student, first grade degree pending. Dear Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, could anyone please explain to me exactly what is wrong with the Question of Sport theme tune, Another Way to Die? For me, it was the highlight of the film. The Hendrix of our generation, Jack White, has successfully written and produced the first ever memorable blues rock Bond song. His innovative collaboration with the very sexy and talented Alicia Keys has gelled together three genres of music and is far more listenable than Chris Cornell's or Cornell's generic You Know My Name. Also, let's face it, Amy Winehouse couldn't have done any better. I've been listening to the song on repeat all day whilst doing my dissertation, as it is nothing other than an awe-inspiring good tune.
I just can't take Jack White seriously since he went off in a huff when somebody referred to him as a rock pixie because he was wearing green at Glastonbury. I mean, that man needs to get a sense of humour.
Shall we do Blindness, I think?
We'll do that first,
as we get to the new releases section of this programme.
OK, so this is probably you know the most difficult and controversial new film of the week, based on a very, very acclaimed novel, which I haven't read. Have you read it?
No. Is it called Blindness?
It is called Blindness.
In which case, I haven't.
And apparently it has a sequel called Seeing, but I haven't read either of them. Directed by Fernando Moraes, who made City of God, which was very good, and Constant Gardener, which I thought was rather overrated. Starring Julianne Moore, who is my favourite actress. I think she's absolutely brilliant, and I would see any Julianne Moore film, you know, with a light heart, because I think she's always interesting and always great to watch. The plot, and it's a pretty thin plot, is that modern life has effectively been brought to a standstill because a viral, it appears to be viral, outbreak of blindness suddenly occurs, which strikes very fast and very suddenly, and in an incredibly short period of time, effectively brings society to its knees. Here is an explanatory clip.
What about the roads and traffic?
Chaos as usual. But then reports came of a bus crash with 23 casualties. That same day, two planes collided. No one could really say if the disease was the cause of the accidents, but people were terrified, and either the panic spread the blindness, or the blindness spread the panic. Casualties multiplied. People decided to stay home, and the traffic problems were solved.
And what then happens is that the newly blind are rounded up and quarantined in these very, very squalid surroundings, which quickly come to resemble some sort of hideous modern-day concentration camp. And then within the camp, which is effectively sealed off and quarantined by the authorities, factions break out and start warring against each other, the most powerful one led by Gael Garcia Bernal, who came into the studio a couple of weeks ago, and whose incredibly unpleasant character takes control of all the food rations and at first demands payment of jewellery and very soon payment of a much more personal and vicious kind, culminating in one of the most horrible scenes of sort of human degradation I can remember in a long time. And I have to tell you that I came very close to walking out. Now, not necessarily a bad thing, because the thing that was being portrayed, in the same way as if people make films about, you know, the Holocaust, for example, and if those films are in any way palatable, it's often seen as perhaps a criticism because there are certain subjects which should be nothing other than repulsive. And certainly the subject of sexual violence should be nothing other than repulsive. And there's a particular scene in the middle of Blindness, and I have to say it's a tough film, a much tougher film than I expected it to be. I really did think, OK, I've had enough. I'm not sure what the point of all this is. I know that it's horrible, and I think I might have just, you know, I might have just gone, but then it's I stuck it out, just so you know. But It's an interesting and conflicting film. On the one hand, it's a great big overstretched metaphor. I mean, the director himself has said that it's not about blindness. He said that it's about how close society is to collapse and what a very small change can create a huge debt. The idea that civilization is effectively a very fragile construction and you do something to it and very quickly people fall. It's like a sort of, I suppose, a form of Lord of the Flies allegory. And as such, it's fairly bald and fairly kind of, I don't think it's desperately insightful. Of course, this hasn't prevented it from getting into trouble with certain lobbies who say, for example, that its portrayal of blindness as being nothing other than a disability is, you know, is tactless. And some people have got more cross about it than saying that it's tactless. And there has been an awful lot of sort of public shouting about what the movie means and how it deals with that subject. So I think, for the record, let's just say, I think Fernando Moraes is right when he says it's not a film about blindness, about, you know, actual blindness. It isn't. It is using it metaphorically. Whether or not you feel the director has the right to do that is entirely a personal choice. I don't have a particular problem with it. I'm just not entirely sure that what he does with it is anything hugely insightful. What happens is that you sit there watching a film that is essentially an extended metaphor and thinking the metaphor is fairly crass. The film has the look of something which is terribly important and terribly portentous and has those kind of voiceovers which you heard there, which kind of give you the sense that what you're watching is very important. And yet, underneath the surface, I don't know that what's being said is particularly insightful. On the plus front, and you notice that I'm choosing my words very carefully here because I think the problem with blindness is this. When it played in Cannes, it got savaged by the critics, and I think that the version that we're now seeing has been slightly rejigged since then. Also, it has become the middle of this, you know, political firestorm about the way in which it deals with these certain issues, and I absolutely want to be careful about this because I want to be clear about what I'm saying. I don't think it's a terrible movie by any means. I don't think it's a brilliant or insightful movie by any means. I think there are some people, and I'm one of them, who will find certain parts of it very, very hard to take. I mean, it's interesting that the American critic Roger Ebert said that it was unendurable, which sounds like actually a good thing for that sequence to be, but he also said it was complete hogwash and pretentious nonsense, and how dare it. I don't think it's complete hogwash and pretentious nonsense. I think that Julianne Moore's performance is very strong, as she always is. I think Mark Ruffalo continues to be a very, very interesting screen presence. But I think in the end, it's a bit pompous and it's a bit full of itself. And the sort of apocalyptic design of it smacks of Children of Men light, but without any of the real sense of genuine grit. And I just spent an awful lot of it thinking, yeah, okay, Maury Chaykin's performance, incidentally, is brilliant, and he plays the most loathsome character in the film, and I think he's a very, very brave to do it. But I just wondered at the end of it whether the grimness, I mean, you were talking about the film Julia, you know, you said it was a rough ride. I mean, believe me, blindness is no laughs at all. And I just wondered whether, having watched all that, whether it didn't need to have something more to say. So I think in the end, on the surface, it's an impressive and serious work. Underneath, it isn't. And I think that's the problem. The problem is that blindness, in the end, is a hollow experience.
A roundup of correspondence ahead of the news and sport, with more reviews to come. Body of Lies after that.
Sorry for being sort of terribly serious about that, but I think that you have to deal with that film in that way. Don't worry, we'll get back to the cheap gags soon.
Just as a public service thing, Simon in Holt, Another Way to Die is currently number 15 in the hit parade, having been number 9 last week. It peaked at 8 and has been on the charts for 8 weeks.
It peaked at 8. A Bond theme that peaked at 8, with Jack Rock Pixie Elf White at the helm.
Andy says, sorry, I've lost faith. Can we have the real Mark back, please? The pod person so besotted with Scouse self-love and Disney propaganda is clearly a fake. Dear Siskel and Ebert, says Joe, film student in Staffordshire.
That makes you Siskel.
Regarding Mark's policy on no talking in cinemas, and this is the point of the week, because on watching,
I know where this is going to go.
On watching the Culture Show,
I know.
My eldest, who's been brought up with this as the most important doctrine in his life.
I know.
Regarding Mark's policy on no talking in cinemas, you wouldn't do it in church, said Mark.
I know.
What do I see on the Culture Show but him and Bill Forsyth chatting at the back during a screening of Local Hero, talking through the film?
Okay, and I want to say this, and I don't say this very often. I know you're absolutely right. I'm absolutely wrong. and with no sense of what's the film's
running and you're
hang on. Wait. What's the phrase that we use now? An unequivocal, thorough, and absolute apology. You're all absolutely right. And even as I was doing it, and even as I was watching it, there was a part of me that was shrinking, thinking, you are just lower than the low.
You are thoroughly ashamed of yourself.
I am thoroughly ashamed of myself. And you are all absolutely right. And I stand duly corrected. And what's the BBC phrase?
What do we say? You know,
it is thorough and unconditional. Absolutely, hands up.
Podcast this. Never mind Angelina, 125,000 hits. This is going to be extraordinary.
Yep.
Gary in Manchester. I went to see Max Payne. It was awful, but I think Mark needs to play some computer games with a good story, and I would recommend Grand Theft Auto, Vice City, and Final Fantasy VII. They are the Exorcist and Citizen Kane of computer games, and I don't say that lightly.
So Charlie Brooker wrote a long column about how Grand Theft Auto is actually a really interesting thing, but I'm just not computer literate. That's my main problem, is I really wouldn't know where to start with it.
Told you where to start.
But I don't know how to play the game. I mean, I've seen people playing Super Mario Galaxy, and it's like, I don't know what's going on.
Just do this for the news. Cecilia Lindo, formerly Obrero, now in Sweden. I'll start again. So it's Cecilia. She used to be in Sweden, and now she's in the United States. Dear Tweedledee and Twiddle, when I was in high school in Sweden, our beloved English teacher, Mr. John Lowe, used to play us the 5 live movie reviews in class. He used them to let us hear, in quotes, real English in a non-educational situation, and also to teach us about different accents. Blimey, imagine all these people growing up. These are the different accents as put on by our top impressionist, Mark Kermit. While I suspect that it was mainly for his own enjoyment in a way of passing time, some of us really enjoyed the Commodian rants and still listen to The Good Doctor and Dr. Mayo. So please give a shout out to Mr. Lowe and his advanced English class, as I'm sure they still listen to this.
Why? Aye, Mr. Lou.
You and those Cornish accents are just unbeatable. We'll say hello to the appropriate people in just a moment. Is it Body of Lies next?
Yes.
We'll do that in a moment.
It's Quarantine next. But I'm going to be quick and then Body of Lies.
We need to say hello to Stephen Fry, to assorted mentions of members of Fairport Convention.
To Jason Isaacs.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, on that front, and David Morrissey, Ken Brenner and Focus.
David Morrissey, or Doctor Who, as we like to call him.
Gary O'Reilly says, "Dear the real Doctor and the pretend Doctor," mm-hmm. Obviously a doctorate from the University of Manchester is not a real degree. I remember there being a theory that any film with Jason Isaacs is good, or at least improved by having him
in. Jason Isaacs in it, yeah.
I have found a film that defies this theory. Jason, if you're listening, you'll like this. There is a newish Spanish film called La Conjura de El Escorial.
Sorry. You killed my father, prepare to die.
It means the Escorial Conspiracy. The film has a stellar cast. Jason Isaacs, Julia Ormond, Jürgen, is it Prochnow? Would you say?
Well, listen, the last communication I had from Jason Isaacs said that he laughs every time I mispronounce something, so I'm going to say Prochnow.
Okay. The story
Max von Sydow.
In the late 16th century in the court of Philip II, tells the story of the House of Alba fighting to regain the king's favour and displace the rival faction of the House of Mendoza, led by the Princess of Eboli, or possibly Eboli. The film has to be seen to be believed how bad it is. The acting, the script, the directing, although the costumes and settings are impressive, the film is risible, or sometimes risible. It must be seen. It will definitely meet the laugh out loud 5 times criteria for a comedy, rather unfortunate for a supposedly serious drama.
And what's it called again?
La Conjura del Escorial.
We shall definitely pull that out, because we're going to see Jason before Christmas.
Excellent.
And
we'll ask
so
him
we
about
should
it.
Strike him about the head with a DVD copy.
Dominic Holmes says, "Dear Zach and Miri, the good doctor always tells us that whenever he goes to see a film, he enters the cinema with an open mind, never prejudging the piece.
Yeah.
How then can he justify not seeing Easy Virtue because of the poster, which is what you said originally?"
Yeah, it was a cheap gag.
I trust Doogie Horror MD, which is a new name as far as I'm aware for you, will have a perfectly sane reason why. I'd love to hear it. I also don't believe he only laughed twice during Zach and Miri. Has his laughter chip melted?
Excuse me, if you don't believe me about that, ask Derek Malcolm. I was actually, and not metaphorically, sitting at Derek Malcolm's feet, because when I got to the preview screening of Zach and Miri, there were no seats.
That's
there was
Phil
no
Williams
room
had
in
taken
the end because
seat.
Phil Williams had taken my seat. So I had to squat down by Derek Malcolm's feet, and he could guarantee, Phil Williams could guarantee the same thing. Two laughs. And on the subject of Easy Virtue, yeah, the poster thing was a cheap gag. I just literally haven't had time to catch up with it, but I will do. I was off that week. Sorry. You know, it was half term.
Review something interesting.
Let me do this quickly. On the subject of outbreak of virus and quarantine, which, as remember, we we've touched on in Blindness. There's a film out this week called Quarantine, in which there's an outbreak of a virus, a viral outbreak occurs, and a bunch of people in an apartment block are suddenly shut in by the authorities and left to fend for themselves as horrible stuff happens. This time there's a reality TV show. There's a woman doing a TV show with a fire department. The fire department get a call to go to the apartment block. They go to the apartment block. There's an old woman in the flat. When they open the door, the old woman takes a bite out of one of her rescuers, and then all hell breaks loose. If this sounds familiar, it is because it's a remake of the Spanish movie Wreck, which I reviewed not so long ago. And Wreck was absolutely terrifying, not least because of the sound design by a guy called Oriol Tarago, who also did the sound design for The Orphanage. And it was a really shocking, genuinely edge-of-the-seat, nasty piece of work, and I liked it very much. And I really, you know, I know that the kind of the reality TV thing has been done, you know, the found footage motif, which is from Cannibal Holocaust and then Blair Witch and Last Broadcast and Cloverfield and Diary. I know all that stuff, fine, but it still seemed like a fresh and new take, largely because I didn't know where it was going. I didn't trust the filmmakers. I found it quite edgy. Watching this American remake, which is virtually a shot-for-shot remake of Wreck, I knew where it was going, I knew what was happening, I did trust the filmmakers and didn't feel scared. And it's very odd to see something which is virtually a shot-for-shot remake. It's like the virtual shot-for-shot remake of Funny Games, which just, you know, it's the same film, but in English, and somehow it lost its edge. All I want to say about it is this. If you haven't seen Wreck, Quarantine will give you some scares. But you know what? Wreck's available on DVD. Why would you go and see the American language remake of it? Why not just go and see the original on DVD? It costs you less. You can keep it forever. It's in your house, and it's better. Thank you. End of public service broadcast.
I suspect not.
Body of Lies.
Is this the new Ridley Scott film?
The new film by Sir Ridley Scott. Is he, sir? He is, sir, isn't he?
Yeah, and Tony, I don't think Tony is.
Tony's not a sir, no. Tony's not. No, Ridley
and I'm
is
Tony
sir.
And you're Ridley, apparently, where you've claimed you've bagged Ridley.
I have bagged Ridley, although, it always used to be the case that, you know, a new Ridley Scott movie was really something to be excited about because, you know, you look at his old output. There was, 2 years between Duelist and Alien, 3 years between Alien and Blade Runner, then another three before Legend, and then four, and then I think Conquest of Paradise and White Squall, 4 or 5 years between them. Now, he's on a movie a year. Listen, I wrote this down. Gladiator 2000, Hannibal and Black Hawk Down 2001, 2002, Matchstick Man 2003, Kingdom of Heaven 2005, Goodyear 2006, American Gangster 2007, now this 2008, and slated for production in the near future, and I'm not making this up, an untitled Gucci biopic and Monopoly the movie.
Monopoly.
No, I know. I mean, there was a thing about it in The Guardian
that's
today.
That's not true.
It is true. Go to IMDb and you'll see it. I mean, you read about it and you think it's a gag and then you look it up. No, there is the untitled Monopoly the Movie project. Now, this is rather like that Two Ronnies sketch when the guy goes to the optician and he starts reading the furniture. Or that old, the spitting image gag about Michael Caine ringing his agent going, I've got this birthday card, I'll do it. And then opening the phone book, I'll do it, I've got this script, I'll do it. I mean, what is it with suddenly, he used to wait years, now there's one along every year, if not two. Now, what this means is the output rate has gone up, but the hit rate has gone down because the last one was American Gangster, great. Now, Body of Lies, not so great. Essentially, it's an old-style espionage thriller, but it's dressed up in very modern surveillance camera sort of aesthetic. You know, everything's being looked at through.
Why the sudden outbreak of arm waving there when you did?
Because, you know, surveillance camera. Well, because we're all being surveilled, aren't we? We're all being surveilled all the time, looked at by helicopters flying in the sky with neutron thingy bombs. That's surveillance. That's a big thing, right? That's it. And it's Middle Eastern. Story is Leonardo DiCaprio is the man on the ground, actually doing the stuff. Russell Crowe is the guy back in America, bossing him around on the telephone, without leaving the safety of his home. Here's a clip.
How the hell do you expect me to run an operation when you're running a side operation? Listen, you want me to run Amman? Let me run Amman, all right? I have made promises to Hani Salam. You understand that?
Uh-huh. What's your point?
We have to respect what he wants.
I do respect him. What kind of thing?
You were going to blow this entire Amman operation.
I'm just trying to back you up, buddy. It's a dangerous, dangerous world out there, you know?
Well, don't back me up, because I don't need it, all right?
Honey.
All right, whatever. You ready to go?
Whatever.
So, simple dynamic, right? Guy on the ground, actually knows the stuff. Guy on the end of the phone, just doing the bossing around. Obviously, metaphorical thing for, you know, American involvement in foreign territories. Possibly. One could read it like that. Film keeps saying to you how serious it is. It says it's serious in three ways. One of them is the aesthetic, which is all that green, grey, black, you know, ooh, everything very edgy, can't see, you know, fine, so therefore serious. Second, incomprehensible. Therefore, you know, who's he? Can't follow. What's going on? Must be serious. I'm not keeping up. Thirdly, Russell Crowe's fat. Now, simple thing with Russell Crowe, when he's bulked up here, when he's wearing the bulk in his chestal area, it's fluff. When he's wearing it in his waistal area, it's serious.
Chestal and waistal.
Chestal and waistal.
An official medical terminology.
Yes, and then below that he's wearing his bumnal area and then his, you know, knee-nal area. But no, if it's around the waist, because the way we all know is that, you know, as far as the awards are concerned, you know, fat is the new ugly. That's how he did it. You know, I'm a handsome butch guy. I want an award. I know. I'll put some weight on. Can I just say on behalf of those of us who carry around the little extra weight anyway, go away. I don't want you getting an award playing blokes that look like me. Okay? Some of us are proud of the way we look, but Russell Crowe thinks that that's the way he demonstrates he's doing a serious part, is that he eats a bunch of cake for about, you know, a month beforehand. And then
I don't think it's
stage.
A bunch of cake, by the way.
I think in his case, you know, I think it's a whole bunch of cake, mate. It really is. Some tinnies and a whole bunch of cake. So, Russell Crowe's performance is fine. It reminded me to some extent of his performance in The Insider, although the difference is that The Insider was a really brilliant movie, terrifically directed by Michael Mann, and a fantastic story about how the smoking industry is the single most evil industry on earth, and it was brilliant. This just says, you know, the guys on the ground know more than the guys not on the ground. Less brilliant. Solidly liberal credentials. But personally, despite my...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I was going to say, but personally, despite my, you know, lefty... Virage Mendes must stay, deportation, no way, background.
What?
Actually, I preferred...
What?
Socialist workers. Socialist. I was never in the SW. Learn the arguments to take on the bosses, buy the pension, that.
What, you sold socialist workers?
No,
like
I said I didn't. No, of course I didn't.
That's are you speaking like you're a
Because that's how people do cod lefties in the 1980s. You know, a Wolfie Smith,
that.
Right? You remember
right, so,
that?
Right, so even though you're an old-fashioned
Even though I'm
lefty.
An old lefty, I actually prefer the much more politically suspect, although I didn't think it was, Black Hawk Down, which is much more nihilistic, much more brutal, much more unforgiving, much less liberal, but has the same sensibility of that kind of the fog of war, the craziness of war thing going on. Sorry, one other point I was going to make, which was that in the middle of all of this, the real standout is Mark Strong.
Yes, very good.
And he is. Have you seen Body of Lies?
Yes. Thanks for listening to the show. Interviewed Ridley Scott. You just carry on. You're too busy walking around not watching movies.
You know, I can do one of two things.
You can download the podcast. It's
yeah,
still available,
really?
Probably.
Because I can't get it along with your podcast with Angelina, who didn't say anything about your hair,
no,
but she did
right.
about mine.
That's
no, but
because
Mark
we're in different rooms.
But don't you agree? That what you said, had she been in a room, she would have said, yes, Simon, the Tintin look is one
that's
that I
right.
really must get Brad to
Liz
pick up
on. Liz
on
this email says, having... looking forward to Body of Lies review, trying to decide whether to see it. Having seen the wonderful Mark Strong on Breakfast this morning, I imagine that's on the television, I'd like to request he be added to the list of hellos, because I'm sure he listens to you. He's an intelligent man.
I'll happily do that. I mean, I think he is actually far and away the best thing in the film. And his performance, I did buy his performance. And also, interestingly enough, in the film, he's the only one who understands what's going on. And in the cinema I was
in... He's the head of the Lebanese security
and,
forces.
Yeah, and he is also a sort of the eminence grise. He is the kind of... That means the greasy eminence,
the greasy
well
says,
who sort of actually that. Is secretly
in charge of everything.
In charge of everything, yeah.
Are you done? I thought you were going to build up something. Mark Strong.
No, I like him very much. Yes, and he's the best thing in the film, so it's worth seeing for him. But the rest of it, I have to say, it's a little bit like I could do with Ridley Scott backpedaling a little bit and doing one movie every 2 years rather than one movie every 1 year.
Matthew, aged 14, says from Monday through Thursday. I am almost always one of the last to leave school. That is apart from Friday, when I'm one of the first, so I can listen to your reviews, of course. I'm currently in year 10, studying for my GCSEs. As part of our English coursework, we have an essay on Saving Private Ryan, and I would be over the moon if you could supply me with a quote on the film, which I could add to my essay. So this
27 minutes of brilliance, 2 hours of melodramatic waffle.
Just say it again, because he's writing it down. So at dictation speed.
27 minutes of brilliance... followed by 2 hours of melodramatic waffle, which is absolutely epitomised by the scene in which the mother is seen at home in a house in a cornfield kneading bread whilst waiting for the people to turn up and tell her the bad news.
Martin Hucknall, with regard to The Good Doctor not having time to watch all the films, I work 40 hours a week as a project manager, and within the 40 hours, I spend 40 hours as a project manager. By this logic, Mr. Kermode, with his job being a film critic, would need around 16 hours to watch and review 8 films if they have an average running time of 2 hours. This leaves him with 24 hours to wander aimlessly around London, trying to convince the population that The Exorcist is any good. An email on your blindness review from Andy says, Simon and Mark, I am registered blind, have been from birth. I have listened carefully to Mark's description of blindness, and I'm extremely disappointed that yet again visual impairment is taken out of context by filmmakers
without really giving any thought about the consequences, not only to those who are visually impaired, but the image that the film will create for those who have never come into contact with visually impaired people. I am not precious about my disability, and if anything, make light of it. I just feel that this is a very poor subject choice. Mark, thank you for dealing with this film in a very sensitive way. I really enjoy the film review and get to see films when I can. More audio descriptions for films would make it a more enjoyable experience. To prove I have a sense of humour, subtitle films do nothing for me.
Oddly enough, on the subject of audio descriptions, there's because some audio descriptions are really, really good, and some audio descriptions aren't really, really good. And of course, then and unless you it's something that you go listening to regularly, but there's somebody, there's a particular person, I don't know their name, British person, who does very, very good audio descriptions. I will look into this because it is a really interesting subject, the way in which audio descriptions work. Because when they're done properly, they are really good, and when they're done badly, I mean, obviously, it's like a completely different movie.
Dear Elvis and Priscilla, says Richard Dundas in Nottingham, BSc in Architecture, B Arch in Architecture, and GNVQ in Art and Design, hopefully soon to be DIP and REBA. Blimey.
Oh, my good.
Having a great interest in the subject matter, particularly Carbuncle. late 20th century Germany, I was looking forward to seeing the Bader-Meinhof complex. So when I was getting a free evening away from work and a girlfriend commitment, I took the opportunity. What a shame that what I was handed was 150 minutes of confused apathy-inducing frustration of loathsome characters and a string of missed opportunities. A film about irate students made by students for students. The presence of Bob Dylan in the closing credits described the film concisely. Predictable protest yarn, barren of invention. Roll on, he says. Waltz with Bashir.
Yeah, I mean, actually the worst thing about Bader-Meinhof, I don't think it's without merit. I think there are things that are interesting in it, but it is clunky and it's directed by Uli Edel. But the very worst thing is at the very end, I think it's either Blowing in the Wind or The Times They Are Changing. It's one of those Bob Dylan songs that you wouldn't touch with a barge pole, and they do.
I'll give you your cue again. Roll on, says Richard Dundas in Nottingham, BSC. Waltz with Bashir.
An animated documentary, which sounded like such a strange proposition when I first saw this in Cannes, by Ari Folman, about a massacred Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon in 1982. The central character, and you've seen the film as well, the central character is our narrator, who basically was in the Israeli army and doesn't remember whether or not he was involved in this event, which seems to have become the cause of a kind of collective national form of amnesia. But an old buddy of his describes to him that he's been having nightmares that he thinks are related to this terrible event, and then he decides to go and speak to other people, and their reminiscences are brought to life through a process of rotoscoped animation. So essentially it's based on actual interviews that are then dropped. I mean, you interviewed a journalist who was
yes, he's the journalist who, when he's told about the massacre going on, he rings Ariel Sharon and says, you've got to do something about it, and he's not interested and takes no notice.
And how did he describe for you the process of what happened between his interview and what happened on screen?
Well, he just said he just did the...
Was interviewed as you would do a normal...
He was just interviewed, then they took it away and they did what they did.
And they rotoscope, which means you take the original image and you animate it. But what happens, because of the possibilities of animation, is that it's able to slip from what looks like very, very factual animation into great flights of fantasy, images of a man floating on a huge woman's body, images of soldiers coming out of the sea like something from Zombie Lake, images that are on the one hand strangely beautiful and yet very haunting and mesmerizing and dreamlike and nightmarish. Now, in advance of seeing it, I just thought I'm really not convinced that these two subjects will go well together. The kind of the flights of fantasy of animation and the the clearly appalling news story behind this. I have to say that Waltz with Bashir is one of the most remarkable films of the year. I have one complaint with it, which I will get to. But I sat there watching it in Cannes, and I've seen it again since, and thinking, this is very, very brave. It demonstrates, firstly, what a great year that we were in which animation can include Waltz with Bashir and WALL-E, both of which look like they are potential Oscar nominees, and not just in the animation category. I think Israel has put forward Waltz with Bashir as its contender for the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar, and rightly so. I mean, it's intelligent and adventurous and brave, because what it's doing is it's saying that the way to get to the truth may not simply be through, factual news footage. There may actually be a visual way of explaining something that is truthful. It reminded me to some extent of the poetry of something like The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, in which what you're doing is you're talking about a real story, and a genuinely real story about a human tragedy, but doing it in a way which is incredibly poetic and visually interesting and really understands the medium of cinema. So hats off, because frankly I thought it was a huge leap forward both for animation and for the documentary format. And I was the only thing that I had that was a problem for me was in the very end they resort to actual footage. because to demonstrate that the events that we've been hearing about are real. And I felt that that showed a certain act of bad faith. It was almost as if they'd got to the end of the film and they thought, you know, we have to show this in the photographic way, because it's almost like the animation can't quite get it across. And I have to say, it had got it across for me. I didn't need the shift into reality. I felt that the job was done so well and so adventurously and so intelligently and so of a piece that in the end, the intrusion of the non-animated footage seemed to me to be unnecessary. Now, I know other people would disagree, and I know one particular person who said that they absolutely needed to see the real photographic stuff at the end to say to them, this is true. I thought the truth was in the animation, and I think it's a really striking piece of work.
Simon in Exeter says, hello, John Sargent and Christina Rianoff and Jason Isaacs and the forever tortured Sean Pertwee. Looking forward to your farewell dance tomorrow night. Is Waltz with Bashir the documentary version of A Scanner Darkly?
Well, oddly enough, the rotoscoping technique does remind you of that, and there is a similar sort of kind of, you know, mesmeric, dreamlike feel to the visuals, and that's what you get with rotoscoping, but it's obviously the subject matter is completely different. But yes, they're both using the rotoscoping technique to do something very adventurous. And, you know, and again, I gave the Kermode Award for Best Animation last year to Scanner Darkly because I thought it really had, you know, it was a very brave attempt to do something interesting.
What does that award look like?
It looks like me, only thinner.
Robin in Peterborough, last week during your film review, someone used the term diddly squat.
Diddly
I was
squat,
going
yeah.
to text in and quip, didn't he direct Alien? Hey! Yeah, you want to mention one other film, but briefly, because there's such correspondence. Oh, look, Drive is on in 90 seconds.
Well, Choke, you know, the new movie based on a novel by Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote Fight Club. Here's the plot synopsis. I'll do it very quickly. Sam Rockwell is a sex addict. His mother's got Alzheimer's. He works in a theme park dressed as a historical character. He goes to sex addicts' meetings. He spends his spare time pretending to choke in restaurants to get people to Heinlich him, who will then give him money for the rest of his life because they bond with him. He starts having a thing with Kelly MacDonald, who he thinks is a nurse, who discovers that his mother actually used some holy relic tissue in the impregnation thing, which means that actually he's descended from this... You know what? Don't care. Rubbish. It was a really strange thing, sitting there thinking, on the one hand, I kind of was really excited about this because I was excited by the Chuck Palahniuk, you know, Fight Club thing, and I like Sam Rockwell, and it sounded like an adventurous movie, and it was just one of those movies that couldn't decide whether it wanted to be cynical or, you know, just breast-beating and whingy, and it ended up being, and this actually, courtesy of James King, said to me, the worst thing about it is it's like watching one of those Robin Asquith Confessions movies, and it was, and if a child like James knows that, that's how much it is.
So on balance then, and after careful consideration, what, pray, is movie of the
Waltz
week?
With Bashir. Waltz with Bashir.
You don't think Body of Lies might just come in a little slightly?
No, I didn't like Body of Lies, but I like Waltz with Bashir,
about,
and so therefore Waltz with Bashir. Well, Waltz with Bashir, because ordinary people are still have good and bad.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. Thanks so much.
No, thanks. No, thank you.
Have a great weekend. See you next week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.